And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their support this morning. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. More on them coming up a little bit later on. We will also be joined by Congressman David Rauser coming up here in less than 30 minutes this morning. We'll, of course, bring up and talk about the big news of the last couple of days, which continues to be a war raging in the Middle East between Israel and Iran, as now for the second day straight, many folks in the United States on edge, and rightfully so, over whether the United States is going to get involved in the conflict. Yesterday morning, we looked at this Poly Markets, which is this very interesting website where you can go and look at a variety of essentially a prediction website, and it goes through and it looks at what are the various things that could or couldn't happen, and it lays them all out. And yesterday morning, as we were on the air, the question is, will the U.S. have military action against Iran before July? Yesterday, it was about a 50-50 shot when we were here on the air. At least that's what the Poly Markets were projecting. Now, as we look this morning, well, that number is significantly higher. Now a 64% chance, but that is way down from where it was last night. Or yesterday afternoon around 4 p.m., you had over 82% of the predictions coming into Poly Markets saying, yes, the United States will strike before July. You've got, a couple of weeks left before July 1st gets here. That number is now down a little bit this morning, down to 64%. But as this continues to go on, the question continues to be asked, and it remains to be answered as of this morning as to whether or not the United States will get formally involved. And I'll tell you what, President Trump is showing an incredible amount of discipline with this situation. You've got the Ayatollah in Iran. You've got Iranian diplomats that continue to try and poke the bear and seemingly are trying to bring and force the United States into this conflict. The getting a post out from social media earlier this morning from the supreme leader of the Ayatollah. This is the translated post reads as follows. Intelligent people who know and the nation and the history of Iran will never speak to this nation in threatening language because the Iranian nation cannot be surrendered. And America should know that if any U.S. military intervention will cause irreparable damage. And so the question that I'm asking myself this morning is, what does Iran think the end game is here? I mean, they've already been warned that if they strike any sort of U.S. facility, if there is a single hair on a single U.S. service member stationed anywhere throughout the Middle East that is even moved due to this situation that's going on between Israel and Iran, that the consequences will be swift and they will be just. And I have nothing that I have heard, nothing that I have seen that indicates that it is anything otherwise. If Iran wants to step out of line, if Iran wants to get involved in this situation, then force the United States to get involved in this situation, it's not going to end well for them at all. And the president, I think, has shown an incredible amount of posture and reserve as it relates to this situation thus far. I mean, all forces, many forces, are trying to dissuade him and force him into this conflict. And it's obviously one that continues to be rather controversial. Is there a significant risk of the Iranians and specifically the Ayatollah building up the technical capability to spin up centrifuges to the point where they are able to enrich uranium and load it onto some sort of ballistic missile and make a nuclear payload? Absolutely. The president has mentioned that for years. You've seen us commentary on social media clips over the past couple of years where the president has been very clear about that stance. Absolutely. Is there a risk there? There sure is. Nobody's going to argue. I'm at least not going to argue that that's not a severe risk. And so the question is, how do you deal with this going forward? as we are coming on the air this morning. Intense Israeli airstrikes targeting Iran's capital are continuing this morning as the president is demanding a, quote, unconditional surrender. As the United States, according to military officials, continues to send warplanes to the Middle East, according to clips from Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, that is being done in nothing more than defensive posture, at least at this point. Trump did make a series of statements yesterday about the conflict, including warning the supreme leader of the Ayatollah that the United States knows where he is hiding, however, that there is no plans to kill him, quote, at least not for now. That was some of the commentary yesterday from President Donald Trump. His statements are continuing to, I think, lend itself to the uncertainty as it relates to the United States' role in the conflict as residents of Tehran flee their homes on the sixth day of Israel's air campaign aimed at Iran's military and nuclear programs. There's also some other reporting coming in this morning that Israel has been successful in targeting more of the nuclear facilities that currently exist in Iran, that they have been successful in doing that. The Iranian UN ambassador told reporters less than an hour ago that he sees the United States as being, quote, complicit in what Israel is doing. And so I guess now Iran is trying to move the goalpost. There's a big difference between being complicit with something and actively being involved in this war. Now, Iran is going to try and use any means possible to try and draw the United States into this conflict. For what reason? I have no freaking idea. I don't know what their end game is. If the United States, if President Donald Trump decides to get involved, which, by the way, the involvement will be things like very strategic airstrikes. The idea that the United States is going to have boots on the ground in Tehran tomorrow, the likelihood of that seems to be almost non-existent. If the United States is to get involved, at least right now, with the situation that we are looking at, with all of the information that we've got available this morning, the situation would be strategic airstrikes. Some of those, what are called bunker buster bombs that the United States has access to really dig down and get into some of these underground facilities that exist throughout the country of Iran that many intelligence folks and many intelligence officials say are housing a large amount of Iran's nuclear capabilities. You know, they understand the situation and the risk that they're in, so they decided to build many of these facilities underground. From a strategic standpoint, smart move. Obviously, I'm not siding with Iran or siding with the Ayatollah, but from a strategic standpoint, smart move to build these and bury these facilities essentially underground, making it significantly harder to attack them. You're not going to just get them with surface-to-air ballistic missiles. You're going to need some other sort of bomb or some other sort of equipment that has the ability to tunnel into the ground and then, of course, explode or cause some sort of blast. So that's what's being said this morning. I'm not really understanding the commentary from the Iranian UN ambassador saying that the United States is complicit in what Israel's doing. Does the United States know what's going on? I think that's been proven pretty clear and obvious by this point. Is the United States, specifically is President Donald Trump, trying to continue to work on this situation? I think the answer is unequivocally yes. I think if President Trump was not leading the directive, and again, all of this is probably happening behind closed doors. All of this is happening in private conversations between the president and the prime minister of Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. The leader of the Ayatollah would already be dead. The supreme leader, you can guarantee Israel would have already killed him, right? They've taken out the rest of the top officials in Iran already. They are essentially waiting to take him out. And I think a large part of that is due to President Donald Trump's influence and his attempt to try and still, after all that has gone on over the last 5 or 6 days, the president is still advocating for peace. The president is still willing and able to negotiate. Now, he mentioned multiple times yesterday that his patience is wearing thin. Can't really fault the guy for that. I mean, he's been trying for the last 60 days to get Iran to come to their senses, to make a logical decision as it relates to the future of their country, and they're unwilling to do so. And so I believe that the line of communications are probably still open this morning, but I'm not sure they're going to be open much longer. This will probably only go on for another 12, 24, maybe 48 or so more hours before President Trump probably throws his hands up and says, you know what? I tried. I gave it my best. I did my damnedest with this whole situation. But the reality is Iran is unwilling. The supreme leader is unwilling to have a serious discussion about this at all, and probably will just turn Israel loose. And that's probably the situation that unfolds. And of course, the question behind all of that is, does the United States get involved with strategic airstrikes? And you've got a pretty big split right now amongst the right, a pretty big split amongst the Trump base over this. You've got many folks that believe that the nuclear threat that Iran poses is serious enough that the United States does need to get involved, that the United States does need to step up with those strategic airstrikes and essentially put an end to the Iranian nuclear program, which from at least the commentary that I've seen, the kind of back and forth debate that I've watched over the last couple of days, all indications is that the United States absolutely has the ability, if they were to get involved, which I'm not advocating for, but if they were to get involved, has the ability to very quickly completely nullify the Iranian nuclear program as it exists right now. And so that's the stance, that's the argument that some folks on the right are taking. On the other side of the coin, as it relates to folks that are closely aligned with President Donald Trump, they say that no, this is not the place for the United States to get involved. This is not a conflict that it makes necessary U.S. intervention. This is not a situation that requires the United States to get involved in either directly or through some sort of weird proxy war in the Middle East. And I completely see and am capable at looking at both sides of that argument. Now, I stand pretty clear this morning that I'm hopeful that President Trump doesn't get involved. I think that Israel to this point has been able to, from all reports, completely secure the Iranian airspace. I mean, from everything that I've read, whether it's right-wing news or left-wing news or more centrist news, whatever, even if that exists to this day, everybody is indicating that Israel has complete dominance and air superiority over Iran. As of this morning, there's not been there's not been a single Iranian fighter jet that has been even shot at or damaged by Iran. But air dominance is being secured this morning by the Israelis. So I believe that there's still a lot more that they're capable of doing before the United States gets involved. A major explosion was heard around 5 a.m. local time here in the United States in Tehran Wednesday morning following other explosions that boomed earlier in the pre-dawn hours. Authorities in Iran offered no acknowledgement of the attacks, which have become increasingly common as the Israeli airstrike campaign has intensified since they began last Friday. At least one strike appeared to target Tehran's eastern Tehranian neighborhood, where the paramilitary Revolutionary Guard has its academy. The Israelis earlier warned that they could strike a neighborhood south of the Mabrad International Airport, which does include residential neighborhoods, military installations, and other firms as well. Israeli also claimed that it had killed another Iranian general in Ali Shamata, who Israel described as the country's most senior remaining military commander in Tehran. He was known in the country and was last week appointed to essentially a chief of staff-like role, as other individuals within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard were struck and killed pretty quickly into this conflict. So as it stands this morning, the president continues to call for a surrender from Iran, an Iranian surrender in this situation, wanting a real end to this global conflict and long-term peace. And from everything that I've heard from the president publicly, he believes that that is possible, but only possible if the Iranian government is willing to give up their nuclear program. If they are willing to come to an agreement that would essentially mean that they would not be on the path to nuclear capability, which, by the way, I'll just state this. For the last 30 years, there has been discussions and talks about how close the Iranian government is to actually enriching uranium to the point where it can be used in a nuclear weapon. I saw a very interesting chart on social media yesterday that quoted New York Times articles from the mid-1990s talking about how at the point Iran was only 3 to 5 years away from a nuclear capability. That was in 1995. Then as you headed into the early 2000s, it's always essentially been, 1 to 2 years, their program could be a global threat. And, you know, there is definitely some significant questions about how close to this program are they. As of late, the discussion, not only from the Israelis, but from some U.S. intelligence, indicates it could be days to weeks as it stands right now. I don't know necessarily how much stock I put into that when you've been told for 30 years that a country has got will have the ability to refine uranium to the point where they can use it as part of a nuclear warhead on a ballistic missile. You kind of get into a little bit of a boy who cried wolf situation when you've been saying that for 30 years, which is seemingly been the case, at least from all of this, some of the online reporting and some of the newspaper excerpts and things over the last 30 plus years or so. So we'll obviously continue to keep an eye on that. Dropping later today, Tucker Carlson is set to do a full interview with Ted Cruz on the situation ongoing between Israel and Iran. Tucker Carlson did provide this clip, put a little, I guess you'd call promo together for it with some of the back and forth between him and Senator Cruz. President Trump called Tucker Carlson kooky just a couple of days ago over his stance, which is very hardline, that there needs to be absolutely no U.S. involvement at all. Here's the clip from Tucker Carlson's team on a podcast coming out later today.
How many people live in Iran, by the way?
I don't know the population.
At all?
No, I don't know the population.
You don't know the population of the country you seek to topple?
How many people live in Iran?
92 million.
Okay. Yeah,
how could you not know that?
I don't sit around memorizing population tables.
Well, it's kind of relevant because you're calling for the overthrow of the government.
Why is it relevant whether it's 90 million or 80 million or 100 million? Why is that relevant?
Because if you don't know anything about the country...
I didn't say I don't know anything about
the country. Okay, what's the ethnic mix of Iran?
They are Persians and predominantly Shia. Okay,
you don't know anything about Iran. So
okay,
actually,
I am not the Tucker Carlson expert on Iran.
You're a senator who's calling for the overthrow of the government.
You're the one who
claims anything about the country.
No, you don't know anything about the country. You're the one who claims they're not trying to murder Donald Trump.
I'm not saying that.
Who can't figure out if it was a good idea to kill General Soleimani, and you said it was bad.
You don't believe they're trying to murder Trump.
Yes, I do.
Because you're not calling for military strikes against them in retaliation. And if you really believe that.
We're carrying out military strikes today.
You said Israel was.
Right, with our help. I said we. Israel is leading them, but we're supporting them.
Well, you're breaking news here, because the U.S. government last night denied, the National Security Council spokesman Alex Pfeiffer denied on behalf of Trump that we were acting on Israel's behalf in any offensive capacity.
No, we're not bombing them. Israel's bombing them.
You just said we were.
We are supporting Israel.
This is high stakes. You're a senator. If you're saying the United States government is at war with Iran right now, people are listening. Okay.
Well, that is set to be an interesting interview when that comes out a little bit later on today. I am very much looking forward to seeing this full back and forth. I like Tucker Carlson. I think this concept, though, of what is the demographic makeup percentage-wise based in the country, I mean, that's not a valid argument. I mean, it's a cute thing that Tucker Carlson, and again, I really like Tucker Carlson. I'm a big fan of his show. What he's done with his media platform is something that of course I would strive to follow in some of those footsteps. But that to me is not a barometer of whether the United States should actively get involved in carrying out offensive strikes on Iran. The only way that that can happen is if Senator Ted Cruz, who I also like, knows exactly the demographic makeup of the country. I don't know that that's a relevant discussion. It's kind of a cute political point to make. But I'm curious, you know, this is obviously just one little excerpt, about a minute and a half from the interview that is set to launch a little bit later on today. I don't believe it's out yet. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes down. And the arguments that Ted Cruz makes, he seems to be more on the side of actively getting involved. But I'll tell you what, and I mentioned this yesterday morning, it is amazing in the information age that we live in, right? For the last 2 days, we have seen, at least I have, at least on social media, have seen remarkable commentary about how it's confirmed once again the United States is getting involved. I've heard that now for the last 36 hours. Since late Monday night, the discussion has been the United States is ready to get involved. The United States is, President Trump is signing an executive order. This was the commentary around 7 or 8 o'clock Monday night, that the president was going to come back from the G7 and was going to sign some sort of executive order, which I don't know that an executive order is not the way to do it, but sign an executive order to actively get involved in offensive strikes. That was Monday night, 7 p.m. It's now 7:23 a.m. Wednesday morning. It still hasn't happened. And part of, I think, what makes this so interesting to watch is, in fact, social media. Is, in fact, that you've got like these websites, like the Polymarket website that I was showing you earlier, that, you know, in real time, this kind of discussion is taking place. There's been a lot of propaganda from the Israelis, from the Israeli news outlets, indicating that the United States is already actively involved. Now, to the point of that, the United States is involved. They have been fully transparent that they are helping the Israelis in the defense. As Iran shoots anywhere between 50 and 100 missiles at a time, ballistic missiles, towards Israel, the United States is actively involved in shooting down those missiles and making sure that they don't hit valuable targets and explode in the country of Israel. That is not up for debate. The point that is up for debate this morning is the fact that, or is the question, rather, that the United States is going to get actively involved in an offensive nature, actively going in and having U.S. Pilots, U.S. jets, and U.S. armaments actually impacting the country. That has been kind of the interesting discussion that has taken place. Nothing has been confirmed. The president seemingly is no closer to getting involved in the conflict than he was 2 days ago. Now, could the president come out in the next 30 minutes and say, we're doing it, we're actively getting involved, we're setting this up? Sure. I mean, it's a very fluid situation, and that's what makes this so interesting to cover from a news standpoint, is it's so incredibly fluid, and the time zone and the time makes everything kind of interesting as well. A lot of stuff kind of happens late in the night here in the United States and in the overnight hours. But, you know, I think the president's going to do everything that he can to not actively get involved. Right? He has been somebody, and I know the commentary, I've seen the coverage, that this is not the same situation as getting into a war with Iraq or Afghanistan. This is not a forever war in the Middle East. I completely understand that point. And I see that there's a differentiation. I see that there's a difference. I'm not going to argue to the contrary. And so it is just very interesting to watch this. We're getting some live comments coming in this morning on our Rumble live chat. Fake news regarding President Trump jumping in on the war wagon. They want the MAGA base to be divided. You know, I think there's some of that. Yeah, there's some level of that is propagating. But there's also this immediate reaction from those on the right that have already got their stance and opinion set. And there's nothing wrong with having an opinion. But you've got those folks on the right that are torching President Trump for a decision that he has yet to make. You've already got individuals. And again, there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't want the United States involved in the conflict between Israel and Iran. There's nothing wrong with saying that. But you've got people that have already made up their minds that Trump has done this. It's already happened. This is all based on BS reporting that is propagated through social media. But you've already got individuals that have said Trump's already involved, or he's going to already be involved. I'm against that. So now I'm angry at President Trump. I'm angry about the situation that's unfolding. There's just no evidence to back it up. There's been plenty of speculation. There's been plenty of rumor. There's been plenty of what I'll call Israeli propaganda indicating that the United States is ready to get involved, but it hasn't happened. So it's okay to have your opinion. It's okay to be strong-lined one way or the other, but until a decision is actually made, it's very hard for me, or it should be hard for anybody else, to go out and torch President Trump or anybody else associated with the administration before a final decision has been made. I hope the president is able, he seems to be handling this, at least to this point in time, in a very strategic manner. He has noted again that his patients are running thin, and it's going to be an interesting situation to watch unfold, you know, literally hour by hour here. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. We'll talk to Congressman David Rauser coming up here in just a few minutes. Before that, I want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. For over 20 years, since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're in a situation where you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you need a strong criminal defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit their website, lawgroupnc.com, where you can see all of the areas of law that they practice. You can meet the team, see the credentials, and they've got a really great blog as well over on the lawgroupnc.com website. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. Coming up on the other side, Congressman David Rauser of the 7th Congressional District will talk about the ongoing conflict between Israel and Iran, plus some other news out of Capitol Hill and Congress as well. As the Nick Craig Show rolls on, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. A lot going on this morning that we are keeping a track of both internationally and nationally here across the United States and southeastern North Carolina. To walk us through everything this morning, Congressman David Rauser of the 7th Congressional District joins me this morning on the Nick Craig Show. Congressman Rauser, thanks for the time. I'd be remiss if I didn't start off with some discussion on what's going on internationally this morning. Israel, Iran have been battling over the last 5 days or so. Some questions about U.S. involvement. And one of the things I continue to hear from individuals like Secretary of State Pete Hegseth and others is the fact that the United States is leading through strength, which is something, as you talked about a lot, that the last administration didn't have. When you hear somebody like Pete Hegseth say that, what does that mean to you?
Well, number one priority of any president is to address the safety and well-being of American citizens, whether that's here at home or whether that's abroad. And just because a threat may be well overseas, thousands and thousands of miles away, does not mean it won't have repercussion here in this country. So your first responsibility is to defend the country and take care of the American citizens. Israel, after all, is our closest ally. We have a lot of thousands and thousands of Americans that are in Israel, very, very close ties with Israel that our countries have had for a long, long time. And folks need to remember, you know, Iran's very clear. The Ayatollah's, you know, made no mistake about it. He refers to Israel as the little Satan and America as the great Satan. So for those who may think that this is a war just simply between Israel and Iran, keep in mind Iran is the number one state sponsor of terrorism. They are the reason why the Middle East is a tinderbox, and they're our enemy too. Israel goes down, the Middle East goes up in flames, America is next. So let's don't be fooled about that.
The whole situation is pretty unfortunate. When Trump went out of office and Joe Biden came in, a lot of reports indicated that Iran was essentially broke. Trump had cut off a lot of their cash flow streams, which strangled many of their proxy groups throughout Lebanon and Syria, that it seems like the cash started flowing back in over the last 4 years. And here we are this morning.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, some administrations, including the previous administration, for whatever reason, just don't believe, never have been able to get it in their minds that this regime was intent on nuclear weapons. And they are. And not only are they intent on nuclear weaponry, developing it, they're intent on using it against Israel and us. They're very clear about that. And so, you know, any policy opposite of addressing that directly really is a failed policy. And that's what we saw in first Trump administration. You're absolutely correct. Mike Pompeo engineered the maximum pressure campaign, and that that campaign dried up their revenue to produce the uranium and missile delivery system that they need. Then the Biden presidency comes in, gets sworn in, and the first thing that they do is the exact opposite. They open back up those spigots of money for them. And what do they do? Nothing geared towards peace. Everything geared towards annihilation of Israel, and not only annihilation of Israel, but I have to stress again, if Israel were to be blown off the face of the map, we're next.
Yeah, obviously, it's a developing situation. We'll keep an eye on those details. It's kind of an interesting tie. It's got some international elements of it as well. And here locally in southeastern North Carolina, of course, the district that you represent, the Port of Wilmington has really been booming over the last 15 or 20 years. You brokered some legislation in Congress and introduced it. It's called the Port Supply Chain Security Act. I would imagine that there's a lot of relevance with the port here in Wilmington. What exactly does that mean for our audience this morning?
Well, the first thing to understand is, you know, China makes the vast majority, like 95% of these cranes that are used at ports. They're Chinese made and they're operated with Chinese software. So the Chinese have the capability through that equipment, through that software, to determine what products are coming in, when they're coming in, how they're coming in. And of course, from a supply chain standpoint, all folks have to do is just go back to the days of COVID when our supply chain was quite disjointed. Products were halted on the high seas. You couldn't move product from point A to point B in any kind of timely, efficient, and effective manner. And you saw a run up of prices. And of course, the one thing worse than a run up of prices is no product whatsoever. You know, a lot of shelves were bare. And so anyhow, that's what this legislation is aimed at addressing, replacing these cranes, replacing the software utilized to operate the cranes so that the Chinese don't have that kind of covert advantage.
Can you talk about the importance of the Port of Wilmington? You know, you look at your congressional district and you look at some of the impacts and the elements, then it's obvious that for the most part, Wilmington is one of the larger drivers in your 7th congressional district. Is the port vitally important for continued growth that we're not only seeing in Wilmington, but some of our neighbors, Brunswick and Pender County as well?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, business at the port has really taken off over the last 10 years. They've had, I think, a significantly good leadership over the years, the last 10 years in particular. And you really see that. It really is driving growth in the area. And the Port of Wilmington, they have cranes. I think all of their container cranes are Chinese made. And so going back to the piece of legislation, you know, they're Chinese made and they're there because that's what was available to the port. We've got a lot of strides that need to be made in order to convert these cranes out. And the particular bill we were talking about a second ago, that addresses that. It provides them another funding source to tap into to replace those cranes that are Chinese made and utilizing the Chinese software. But the port is absolutely crucial to economic growth in the state of North Carolina and the Southeast as well.
transitioning a little bit, you sit on the T&I committee. Before we get into some legislation that you're dealing with there, can you walk our audience through this morning what is T&I and why should that be relevant for folks that you represent here in southeastern North Carolina?
Well, the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, for short, we refer to it as the T&I committee. That committee has wide jurisdiction. It includes the water component of Clean Water Act component of EPA, the Coast Guard, FEMA, anything related to highways and bridges. So the Department of Transportation is under our jurisdiction, the FAA, rail, pipelines, you name it. If it's not under the jurisdiction of Ways and Means and under the jurisdiction of Energy and Commerce, it is most likely under the jurisdiction of the T&I committee, unless it's a legal matter. So it pretty much covers everything from A to Z. And of course, Wilmington, we're a Coast Guard city. We have jurisdiction over the Coast Guard as well. In fact, with the big, beautiful bill, we invested another $16 billion, the biggest plus up the Coast Guard's ever seen, certainly in recent times, to address port security, to address our security on the high seas. And of course, they come to the rescue of many a swimmer and others who find themselves stranded off of our coast and in our waters.
And of course, that's incredibly relevant this time of year as so many folks are kicking back on the weekends and heading out to either the parts of the Cape Fear River or the Atlantic Ocean as a whole. You've got this highway bill that's in Congress right now. Talk about some of the relevance in there.
So there's several different subcommittees that the T&I committee is comprised of. The one that I am chairman of is referred to as the Highways and Transit Subcommittee. That committee, we have a highway bill that is authorized, or at least the intent is to authorize it every 5-6 years or so. And it's coming due. The current highway bill expires next September 30th of 2026, not 2025, but 2026. But we're beginning work now to rewrite that highway bill, to rededicate, reorient resources to highways and bridges, roads and bridges, which is what it should be about. Obviously, in these states like North Carolina, where you've had a lot of increased growth, substantial exponential growth, you might argue, particularly in this district, you know, Brunswick County rates as one of the top growing counties in the state. It's either number one or two every year. Most years it's number one in growth. And of course, a lot of folks moving into Pender County here on the coast, New Hanover County as well. So the whole state is growing, but this coastal area in particular has had a lot of growth, and the infrastructure needs are significant. Now, we provide the funding for the formula funds that is dispersed to the states. We're going to try to buttress that as best we can. I suspect the president is going to get very laser focused in on this new highway bill as well, and he's going to want additional resources. And so we're going to have to work through that to figure out how we fund all the needs that we have. But the idea here is to structure this thing so that states like North Carolina and the fast growing states get more of the transportation dollars to address the unique needs that we have. We have a lot of 2-lane roads all throughout this district, all throughout North Carolina. There really should be 4 lanes. We have 4-lane roads that really should be interstates. And we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but this will be a good down payment, I'm hoping. That's going to be the goal. That's what we're going to be striving towards to address our state's transportation needs across the board.
Well, and I'm glad you talk about those needs. Most states, and specifically here in North Carolina, the largest funder of DOT is the gas tax, which folks don't see. It's built into the price that they pay at the pump. Do you have concerns with, as more individuals choose to drive either hybrid or electric vehicles, that cuts off a pretty significant revenue source for an entity like the North Carolina Department of Motor Vehicle?
Well, that's true at the state level, and it's also true at the federal level. You know, back 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when the gas tax was put in place, it was a very reliable source of income. In fact, the state legislature, it was such a reliable source of income. The state legislature under the Democrats back in those days, they used to take all the money from the gas tax from the Highway Trust Fund and siphon it off and send it to their pet projects of choice when the Democrats were in the majority in the state House and the state Senate, which they were, by the way, for a long, long time. And it wasn't up until 2010 that Republicans even had the majority in the state Senate, not since the Civil War anyhow, or Reconstruction. And so at the federal level, you had the same phenomenon over the years, less and less money coming into the Highway Trust Fund because you have hybrids, you have electric vehicles, they're not paying in better and more fuel efficient vehicles. So just as you've seen at the state level, where those revenues have declined over time, same thing has happened at the federal level. And one of the things that we include in the big, beautiful bill that the Senate is now taking a strong look at and rewriting some portions of is we include an EV fee that if you buy a brand new EV car, used or brand new, it doesn't matter. It's an annual registration fee of $250 because currently they use the roads. They're heavier than the average vehicle because those batteries weigh so much. And of course, the weight of the vehicle deteriorates the roads quicker than anything else, quicker than multiple uses. Cars going by, second after second. These heavy vehicles really harm the roadway structure in a way that the other vehicles do not. And they're not paying anything in the Highway Trust Fund. And so we make that change. And then we also establish a fee, an annual registration fee for hybrids as well. So those are two monumental changes. This would be the first modification to funding of the Highway Trust Fund at the federal level since about 2003. And so that's significant. Now, long term, just a registration fee on EVs and a registration fee on hybrids, that's not going to cut it from a funding standpoint. We're going to have to increase revenue. So we're looking at a variety of different options. We'll probably have to be well coordinated with the Ways and Means Committee to address that issue long term. But that is the biggest challenge, biggest hurdle that we face, moving forward with the highway bill is exactly how do we fund it.
Congressman Rausser, I know you've been keeping track with the ongoing saga of the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge. Just over the last month and a half or so, we've learned details about height requirements and a new price tag somewhere in the ballpark of $1.5 billion to rebuild the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge. Obviously, the counties in southeastern North Carolina don't have that money. You can imagine they'll be looking to the federal government. What is the latest that you've been hearing on that from not only elected officials locally, but probably from many of your constituents?
Well, every time I hear somebody talk about it, the price tag goes up. So, number one, we've kind of got to get our arms around exactly what this thing is going to cost because I hear a whole range of figures depending upon who's talking about it. But the grant that was pre-approved, so to speak, that's going to be good. Grants take a while to work their way through to the local community. But the state's going to have to be, and the local governments are going to have to be creative and step to the plate to address the funding needs for that bridge. It's a very obviously it's an iconic bridge, but it's also incredibly important to the workforce, to the economy, to the region, certainly to the state. And so that's going to be a work in progress for some time to come. It's not going to happen overnight, not at that price tag.
Yeah, obviously, it's something that's at least probably at least 10 years down the road, realistically, when you look at some of these debates over height and price, which I'm glad you mentioned started off around $400 or $500 million and seemingly balloons every 6 months or so when there's a new report out. So
Yeah.
appreciate the
And
update.
we will be working very diligently with the locals, the local MPO and the North Carolina Department of Transportation and everybody involved in it to see if there's things that we can do under the construct of the highway bill to help expedite that and find some additional avenues of revenue to the extent that we can. But that's going to require it's going to be a major major lift for all parties, and we're certainly going to work to do everything we can to help get it achieved.
Constituent services is something that is a big part of not only your day-to-day, but your staff's day-to-day, whether it's up in Washington, D.C., or some of your regional offices across the 7th Congressional District. Why might somebody outside to tell you you're doing a great job or a terrible job, depending on who the person is, why might somebody want to reach out to your office? What kind of issues could you help constituents here across southeastern North Carolina?
Well, one of the big ticket items, we have a lot of veterans. We deal with a lot of veteran casework, and we can't resolve every issue, but we resolve a lot of issues. And then passports, that probably still ranks number one, the number of individuals that I hear from on a weekly basis who find that they have a passport that is about to expire or has already expired. We can certainly help expedite renewal of those. And so that's probably one of the most common constituent requests we get. But we have income tax issues, where folks have expected a refund, didn't get a refund, or the IRS just completely botched their return, where we go in and work with the taxpayer advocate to address those concerns of specific constituents. And so we've been able to do a lot for a lot of people all around the area, including those not in the district, in fact.
Tell folks where they can get some of those additional details on how to reach out to you. And you also have a newsletter that you send out on a pretty frequent basis as well. Where's some of that information available?
That's right. The best place to go is to the website. That's kind of the mainframe for all things related to official duties of the office and services that we can provide, which is rouser.house.gov. It's real simple, just rouser, rouser.house.gov. And you can access the web portal there. And also sign up for the newsletter, which usually goes out about once a week, sometimes a little more than that, sometimes a little less than that. But we try to include good information in there that you might not find in the papers. And most of the time you don't find in the papers. Or any other news outlet. And I found that it's become widely popular. There are a lot of people that get that and forward it to many, many others, not just around the district and around the state, but around the country. I've been in other states where people have come up to me about my newsletter before, and I wonder, well, how in the world did you get the newsletter? They say, oh, my aunt lives in Hampstead or any other portion of the district. I get a lot of those.
Congressman Rouser, thank you so much for the time this morning. Appreciate the update and look forward to chatting again soon.
Well, great to be with you. Take care, Nick.
That's Congressman David Rouser joining us here this morning on the Nick Craig Show, a pretty wide-sweeping interview and discussion, whether it's the situation ongoing between Israel and Iran. Of course, talking a lot about that over the last couple of days. The very interesting bill as it relates to dealing with port security, the Supply Chain Security Act, the idea, the notion that the cranes, those big sky cranes that you see if you're heading up and down the Cape Fear River over at the port of Wilmington, that those are 95%+ produced exclusively in China, and how that puts the United States at risk. Some very interesting details there. Again, his website, rouser.house.gov. His email list, you'll see it right when you log in on the website. There will be a pop-up that shows up to put in your email for the newsletter. Very informative, more inside baseball as to what's going on in Congress, and a great way to stay informed here across southeastern North Carolina with things and legislation that has an impact on your life and how we operate and do business here across southeastern North Carolina. Appreciate his time. Appreciate his staff for getting that set up, and look forward to continuing the conversation with the congressman long term right here on the Nick Craig Show. Obviously, all eyes continue on the Middle East. We'll track those details throughout the day today. Want to thank the Law Group once again for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088, or again, their website, lawgroupnc.com. That's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Wednesday. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning right here.